Bunker Show here on 100.2 FM, Freeview 277, online at bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Sutton.
Hello.
Hello. Right, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I just had three biscuits. And,
have you?
Yes. Now I feel a bit better.
For someone that's gluten intolerant, you can half eat a lot of bread and biscuits.
I know. Well, I was very, very strict for many, many years, and then after what's happened to me with the AZ, I just think, you know what, whatever I do, something happens to me, so I might as well eat a biscuit.
Might as well start smoking as well.
Yeah, might as well. Get a patch, nicotine patch.
Mm.
I was saying about, listening, I was amazed at how many people have got these thingy bobs, whatever they're called.
The vape machines.
Yeah. Like, people are walking along with them in their mouth all the time. Like, it's like a dummy. Basically like a dummy.
I have to say, there's lots of people on social media that go around posting pictures from the 1970s of beach scenes when everybody's skinny. Yeah. And they go, everybody's skinny in the 1970s.
Mm.
It's because of the food we ate and all the rest of it. What they never tell you is, of course, that everybody in the 1970s smoked 40 fags a day.
A lot of people did. Yeah, exactly.
Now, I tell you, the rate of smoking in the UK in the 50s, 60s and 70s was well up into the 80s and 90%.
Except I've been to Cairo a lot, as you know, and they all smoke a lot.
Mm.
And they are getting quite tubby, the Egyptians, now.
Yeah.
Maybe in the old... Because there were no ready meals, were there, though, in the 70s?
Yeah, there were.
There were.
Beef curry. Yeah, what's the matter with you? Findus pancakes. Yeah. Don't you remember them? Findus pancakes. They were horrible.
My mum never did ready meals, but they came in very late in the 70s.
No, they didn't. But
did you have a best of beef curry?
Yeah, you know, they used to have those little crispy noodle things that you came with them.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't allowed
And Findus pancakes. Do you remember those?
Vaguely.
Yeah, they were breadcrumb things.
If I went round my friends, we could have stuff like that. Or pop. They had pop. We weren't allowed fizzy drinks. Mum and dad
Wimpy
had their
bars.
Own chicken. Wimpy bar. Oh, I love Wimpy. I love a Wimpy
bee
burger.
Sausage.
Yeah, that's a bit personal. But I love a Wimpy Bean Burger. But yeah, there aren't any Wimpies anymore, are there?
There's one in Maidstone.
There used to be one in Faversham.
There's a Wimpy's in Maidstone in Gabriel's Hill.
It is nice. It's nice. Yeah. I haven't had a burger for years. I mean, I had homemade burgers yesterday.
See,
100% beef.
In the 70s, I smoked like a chimney a lot.
Yeah.
And I was as skinny as a rake. As soon as I stopped smoking, I've just put on weight and just can't stop.
Yeah, but you do eat rather a lot without being rude.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't say I've just put on weight, I know why.
Yeah, no,
I've
but
put
that's
on weight.
What
I put on weight cake.
Yeah,
for
but
me
what,
it's cake.
But what I'm saying is that smoking is an appetite suppressant.
So now you eat more Findus pancakes.
And now live on a diet of Findus pancakes and crispy festive beef curry. You're quite right, Jason. I do. And McDonald's, obviously.
The thing for me is cake, and I am, like, mad about cake. If somebody has to make you a cake. Oh, homemade cake.
I'm pretty good.
Chocolate homemade cake. A chocolate cake or a lemon drizzle. What's your favourite, Jessica?
Mine's probably chocolate.
Mm. A good chocolate or a good lemon drizzle. My mum makes a lemon drizzle, gluten-free, she puts real limoncello in it.
Ooh.
And it's really nice.
We sell carrot cake in our coffee shops.
Oh, yeah.
And it is to die for. We get it from a company called Cake Smiths. They make them fresh in the morning and bring them in, and we sell them all by lunchtime.
Where are they based?
Canterbury.
Cake Smiths.
Yeah. But carrot cake, it's absolutely to die. They do a whole range of other things, but the carrot cake is absolutely stunning.
One of your five a day.
Stunking, yeah.
So that you do make cakes in a scientific fashion.
Yeah. Well, Paul was saying earlier, everyone's got a side job,
a hustle.
That's right,
I went to this wedding on Saturday, and it was on a farm. It was lovely, and this wedding cake was absolutely huge. And it was really sad because as people got drunker and drunker, they were sort of hacking bits off with their looked like their hands. I don't know. Well, it was very sad. I wanted someone to sort of take it away and protect it, and because there were bags that people could take home and that. I had three bits of that cake.
Did you?
Yeah, it's delicious.
Mental health charity West Kent Mine and leading Southeast construction entrepreneur Andrew Mann are urging people to understand and address the symptoms of anxiety and develop coping mechanisms to support their mental well-being in everyday life as part of the Mental Health Awareness Month that's going on. Andrew Mann, founder of Clarity Homes and Commercial and local charity West Kent Mine, are teaming up to raise awareness about the staggering levels of poor mental health within the construction industry, which sees more than 700 suicides a year. Absolutely. I spoke at a construction industry event about this a few weeks ago, and it was a big eye-opener to me. I hadn't realised the scale of the problem. And, of course, one of the issues with construction, it tends to be a fairly male-dominated industry, and it tends to be a fairly macho-dominated industry, so people won't seek help. The company whose event I was speaking at, Genco, had actually put on their sites meditation rooms and places where you could go for help, but nobody ever uses them, because it's just, you know, they're too macho to seek help, and as that report says, the rate of suicides in the construction industry is horrendous.
Yeah, that is sad, isn't it? Because a lot of builders are roughy-toughy, and they...
Yeah, well, it's the macho environment, and it's...
Yeah, I'm all right.
No
just
worries.
Just cut my finger off, and...
It'll grow back.
Yeah. there's an opportunity for female entrepreneurs with Herbies...
With what?
Herbies.
Oh, Herbies. I thought you said herpes.
Herbies.
Oh, that's niche.
Yeah. Herbies. Biz. Program helps. There's a lighting you can take for that anyway. There's always a supplement you can take.
Yeah, yeah.
The popular Herbies program helps aspiring female entrepreneurs to set up their own business, as well as gaining the tools, knowledge, and confidence to start a business venture. The free women's startup program offers a £500 prize to put forward startup costs in an optional business plan competition. And the program consists of a 3x3 hour online session, so 3x3 hour online sessions. And the date is the 28th of July. That's the next one. Somebody's sweetly crossed out the one before. Was that you?
Yeah, that's right, because that's gone.
How sweet you are.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I know what you do. You read it and then go, oh.
Oh, that's gone.
Oh, that's gone.
Yeah. 28th of July, and it's 10 till 1 p.m. And if you enter, you can find out more. You can go to 3W's Let's Do Business Group Events. All details will be on kentbusinessradio.co.uk after the show.
Fantastic. Let's Do Business are based in Hastings as well.
They are indeed.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And we had our guest last week was from Hastings. There's a theme coming on.
Which one?
Our author that was on.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Penny Ennis.
Penny?
Yeah, from Big Brother.
I'm just reading her book. I'm on...
Page two.
It's very I've done a chapter, but it's very interesting because you know she said that she admitted that she has struggled with mental health and OCD, and I said to my new husband, I'm getting this through the book. It's actually making me quite anxious so far. I'm only on the first chapter. It's very interesting. I haven't got to the bit where she's in Big Brother yet, but I am getting her angst. I don't know if I'm very open to it, but I'm feeling quite wild when I read
it. Yeah, it probably helps that you met her and then you know how traumatic it was.
She was a lovely, lovely guest.
Yeah, Sarah Marsh Collins has tweeted, oh my god, Finder's pancakes. They were absolutely vile. Yes, I used to get served up something similar at boarding school too, and then she put a gif of Hogwarts, which was very similar to her boarding school. you didn't mention Vesta beef curries there though, or there used to be Vesta chicken chow mein too, if I remember rightly. Anyway, enough of that nonsense. I want to talk to our next guest because we need some professionalism and some decorum back on this show, and we've luckily got it in the shape of Jason Perry from ASL Recruitment. Jason, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to see you.
Thank you very much. It's always good to know I have to be professional at the welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, that's what it's all about.
I'll do my best.
I'm sure you'll be brilliant. Thank you. So, Jason, kick off. We've already found out that ASL was formed in 1998. Yeah, November 1998.
So you're going to change that bio.
We were incorporated in, I would have said it was late October actually, but that point of starting up a company is always an entertaining one.
Yeah.
And we moved into some offices in Wellington Square in Hastings.
Yeah.
And the first couple of months, I do remember well, we had garden furniture before any of the desks had arrived.
Right.
While we were trying to make sure we had everything in place.
Right.
So we were open in 98, but I think it's fair to say 99 was when we actually started getting candidates through the door.
Right.
And helping people. And I think that's how that date made it to the West.
Okay. I'm fascinated by this, though, because a lot of our listeners, they want to know two things when we're talking to guests. They want to know their business journey, from, you know, what made them do whatever they're doing. And then obviously they need to know what their business is and how their business works.
And whether they've ever had a Vesta beef curry.
And whether they've had a Findus pancake or a Vesta beef.
I remember having
it. Well, you see, you lot are all too young. That's the problem.
Yeah. I do remember their existence,
right.
But my mother was very keen when I was that age to make sure we were fed nutritious meals, all homemade. I'm going to go with that line.
Great.
Okay.
Yeah.
My mum made a paella once. She made it. Yeah, it wasn't out of a pack of anything. She paid it. And I loved it to bits, which was the biggest mistake I ever made in my life. Because then I got it every week for about 8 years. I do like a paella, but I went for a long period when I could do without.
That sounds like a really good reason just to move to Spain.
Exactly, so, Jason, tell us a bit about your background prior to ASL and what was the catalyst for forming ASL?
Okay. I'm actually an HR person by trade, so I did in the early 90s a postgrad qualification with what was then the Institute of Personnel Management, now the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development.
CIPD,
And I'm trying to think in terms of the reasons to do that. I very much wanted to work in the people industry.
Yep.
I started my career with post office counters back in the early 90s.
Were you based in Farnborough?
No. Originally in Hastings.
Right.
And then...
Were you born in Hastings?
No.
Where were you born?
That's a very long story if you're going to go down that road. My father was an HR person by trade, which perhaps influenced part of what I did. You think that would be enough to put me off.
Yeah.
But the end result was we moved around a lot when I was young, so we never really lived anywhere for more than about 2 or 3 years, as a lot of what he was doing was moving around to factories and closing them down and making everybody redundant. And that was his role in the 70s and 80s.
Right.
We moved to Sussex in the mid-1980s.
So where were you born?
Coventry.
Okay.
But I lived in Coventry, Bristol, Chelmsford, Lancashire. Yeah,
so it's quite hard when you're a child and making friends and being moving.
Very much. And also, I think I went to, I forget, let's say 10 different schools.
Yeah, that must have been
a huge number of different schools. So,
But now you live in Hastings?
No. The business is in Hastings. I live in rural Burwash.
Which is gorgeous. It's an absolutely stunning village.
Where is it?
It is between Heathfield and Hurst Green.
That helps
If you go east to west.
Yeah, you've lost her completely there, Jason.
Between Tunbridge Wells and Hastings.
Oh, so you're
kind
of
in the middle of nowhere.
Kent borders.
Where the next village up is Wadhurst, and that I think is just right on the border.
I've heard of Wadhurst.
Wadhurst is technically in Kent.
It's on the border.
It is right on the border, and it depends on who you're talking about. What street you live in Wadhurst.
It was in the Sunday Times best village in the UK to live in a couple of months ago.
Yeah, and that's going to ruin it for you, isn't it?
Well, to be fair, I live in Burwash, which is better. The Sunday Times just didn't visit it.
Yeah, Burwash is a stunning village. It's a lovely, gorgeous village. Anyway, so your background was in HR.
Very much HR. So my last, let's say, real job, as I often put it, was I was a training and development manager for post office counters for South East of England.
Right.
And we were responsible for training sub-postmasters, management training of probably about 2,000 people, if I recall correctly, in the size of that division. But I was also very involved in assessment testing.
Right, okay.
And in the mid-90s, around 94, I had an opportunity to, let's say, parachute out of employment and become involved in the start-up of the business, which was in psychometric testing.
Right,
okay. So we were very involved in aptitude testing, ability testing, personality assessment for both recruitment and also development of people.
Right, okay. Many, many, many years ago, I was involved with a software company run by a chap called Hans Lansing, who you may have heard of.
Indeed.
Yeah, who's a professor of psychology that developed some of those psychometric tests. Yes. Yeah. And I was involved with
a book on the IQ test.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, do you have a background in psychometric testing using some of those tools?
I developed that skill whilst at the post office, let's say, and then when we set up ASL, when it was first established, stood for Assessment Systems Limited,
right.
Which was the first company we set up in 1994. And we worked with many of the major test publishers then,
right.
And we'd whiz round the countryside, running assessment days for different employers. It could be anything from recruiting one or two people.
Yeah.
One of the most fun projects we got involved in, I think it would have been about 96, 97. You may remember the name or know the name Privilege Insurance was insurer. But we were involved in taking them from a very small company up to about 500 staff over a few months,
right.
Where we would go in and we'd run assessment tests for about 100 people in a day and identify who was actually going to make the grade and worthy of interviewing to take them to the next level.
That whole subject is a fascinating subject in and of itself. I just want to ask a question and then back out of this straight away, but while you were talking, I just threw me back. Have you ever been involved or do you get involved in graphology, handwriting analysis?
I'm going to say yes cautiously. I'm going slightly further back. My knowledge of graphology is my mum became a graphology consultant in the 1980s.
Oh, right, okay.
And she ran a business assessing handwriting for employers. Yeah. So I got to know some of that through her. I've never done it myself, but we got involved in the edges of it because of that.
Do they use that in forensics with police for murderers and all these letters and that?
I'm going to say my interest is occupational. Yeah. Don't do forensic or clinical, so I couldn't possibly comment.
It is a thing, but it's a minor thing. One of the reasons I asked, I won't bore you with the details. Many years ago, I was involved with a recruitment business who did a lot of work in France, and almost the entire French recruitment process is about graphology.
Yeah,
everybody has handwriting tests before.
Wow.
I don't know if it's still the case. I'm talking
about there is a huge amount in it, but what we see is this stuff goes through fashions, let's say, in the UK.
Yeah.
I mean, psychometrics was huge in the 1990s.
Yeah.
They have somewhat dwindled now, and lots of employers are far less interested in them.
Yeah. I suppose because of the nature of the changing way that we go about recruitment and some of the I don't expect you to comment on this, but some of the dangers that you have in recruitment, you know, it's very easy to get on the wrong side of candidates if you're not careful, that using any instrument to test them could prove to be a bit difficult if it doesn't come out how they want it to come out, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. Testing is an interesting word because it's the phrase that's used, but that kind of assumes there's a right or wrong answer.
Exactly,
earlier about maths, and I was thinking in terms of that subject. You can look at somebody's aptitude to develop a maths skill and you can actually work out whether they're going to be able to progress and do well in it.
Yeah.
You either have an innate ability that you can learn or you have a current level of skill, which is an ability, and aptitude and ability are two very, very different things in that world.
Absolutely. So let's get back on track to where you were. 1998, having started Assessment Systems.
Assessment Systems Limited, we started about 94, 95, something like that. And we were doing this work for some quite exciting employers on part of the recruitment process, let's say. And one day we had this brainwave and thought, why don't we recruit whole people? Rather than just go in and help somebody else with one part of the process. And we had this bright idea that it would be a natural addition to put assessment testing into a recruitment agency scenario.
Yep.
And our vision was to set up a recruitment agency that would operate very, very differently to anybody else in the market.
Right.
We came from an HR background. We didn't necessarily like the experience as either a candidate or a client, and we knew which bits we wanted to change.
Right, okay. So you took that insight and formed ASL.
Indeed.
Just talk us through the early days of it. How did you find that? Starting a business, where were we in the 90s, late 90s?
With no knowledge of the industry, I should add. We thought we knew how to recruit people from an HR perspective, but we knew nothing about being a recruitment consultant, which is to quite a large degree a sales and business development job. And we thought assessment tests would help. And whilst a lot of clients were quite excited by the idea, what you then found out is the results didn't necessarily help you make a placement if the client didn't understand the results. So we went through a very rapid learning curve, I'm going to say. The first year or so was incredibly tough. And I think there's a point about 6 months in where there was a, have we made a terrible mistake? And then went back, regrouped, and sorted out a revised business plan, which is when we started becoming more successful.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you quite often hear this. People have, you know, without being rude, and again, you don't have to comment on this, I've seen loads and loads of things that lump together estate agents, recruitment consultants, as you know, the biggest waste of space on the planet, and everybody goes, how hard can it be to put someone in a job and charge $2,000, you know, without having any conception of what it actually takes. But by the same token, as you kind of identified yourself, a lot of people then go, well, I can start a recruitment company. I know, you know, I've done loads of recruiting. I've interviewed millions of people, but it isn't just about that. It is a business, and it's about getting the gig in the first place. Okay, so when you first started ASL, based down there in East Sussex, did you have a particular niche you were focusing on in terms of types of jobs, geography, or how did it work?
In terms of being based in Hastings, no, is the short answer. The economy in Hastings, as you'll know, is not the most vibrant economy. You deal with what's there. We wanted to work with local employers. We wanted to add value to the local market. So it's largely manufacturing, engineering, light industry.
Hospitality? Okay.
We did a little bit in hospitality.
There's a few hotels down there, aren't there? Or there were.
There's one or two, but you compare it to other seaside towns. You go and look at Brighton or Eastbourne. They've probably got 10 times as more
different
hotels
kettle of fish
and conference venues and so on. So, no, not very much in that sector.
Absolutely. You're doing mostly light industrial, manufacturing, engineering, stuff like that in the local area. And presumably, out front, you were doing permanent recruitment.
We were doing permanent recruitment and temps.
Straight off?
Yeah.
Okay.
Over a period of time, our business has become very significantly temp-based.
Right.
So, we, for much of the past 10 years, I'd say, were the strongest industrial temp agency in the area. And we have most of the major employers tied up in our client base.
That's fantastic. I mean, from my own knowledge of being around those industries, temp consultancy is a difficult thing to get into because of the cash flow implications.
Indeed.
Yeah, because you have to pay the staff, basically, before you get paid.
And then sell on credit.
Yeah.
It can be a very painful one to get into.
Yeah.
And we've got to a point where we're very strong on it. And, cool. That works incredibly
well. What kind of temp? So you're looking at, again, manufacturing and things like that, or...?
Yeah, lots of light assembly, engineering, manufacturing, warehouse people, quite varied.
So would that be often seasonal as well?
No, there's a small amount of seasonal, but most of it is just the nature of the Hastings and St Leonard's economy and what's around that area.
Mm. So what kind of things are they manufacturing down there?
We have clients making electronic components, so we have PCB assembly. We have quite a bit working in the... Hastings seems to have a strong vacuum business, which is going into the nuclear sector.
What do you mean by vacuum? Hoover?
No. This is an area where I think...
This is George, you're
talking.
Better answer than me on why vacuum components are so big on the nuclear industry.
Right, what
but
is
they
a vacuum?
Do seem to be. They're components that will make a sealed space for presumably conducting some kind of... I'm looking at Jessica now for help here.
Come on,
we supply the staff, but not design the components. But a lot of these are precision engineering parts to make large-scale machinery, so certain scientific processes or chemical processes can be conducted in a, I'm going to say, a safe space.
Yeah.
A sealed environment.
Yeah.
Jessica's agreeing with me here, so I'm getting it about right. So our clients can be confident I know what I'm talking about here.
So within your business, though, in terms of supplying temps, I mean, these are kind of highly qualified temps to a large extent.
No, it's very varied. I mean, we have some reasonably skilled engineering temps. Mm. We have a reasonable number of, I'm going to say, towards the minimum wage end of the market, unskilled.
Right.
And that is the nature of the Hastings economy.
Right.
The other side of our business we have, which is a much more recent addition, ASL Technical, which has emerged in the last year or so, is very high end, and that's actually nationwide rather than Hastings.
Right.
But we're there doing a lot of work in... let's say the automotive industry, performance, automotive industry, Formula One type area, aerospace. So it's quite diverse.
Okay.
Very diverse, isn't it? You're doing everything.
Okay. I like it. But so you're primarily doing temp work and contract work with a small amount of permanent or... is it something you not do at all, really?
No, the permanent is there, and it's actually growing at the moment in the current climate.
Okay.
So, it's over the significant course of the time we've been in business, it's been a smaller part of it, maybe 10-20% of our turnover.
Right.
But it is increasing in the current climate.
Okay. So, I want to kind of come forward a bit, because with a predominantly temp-based business... we then got to a point where the entire world fell apart with a pandemic and lockdowns and everything. And as I know from my own bitter experience, that had a profound effect on employment in the country. As a temp agency, it must have been devastating.
It was. Yeah. In early March, mid-March 2020, we decided to go to a work-from-home environment about a week before Boris announced it.
Right.
And largely, it was us testing and proving we could do it.
Mm.
And it turned out to be a very wise decision. Mm. Temp numbers... by around April 2020, I think we were down to something like 10 temporary workers.
Wow. Okay.
Which, you know, when you look at the scale of how many people we have, what we're actually doing as a business, was losing huge sums of money week in, week out. So it clearly wasn't viable at that point. And it's a question of what do we do?
Yeah.
So for our part... I took it away and reinvented the business. I said, we need to come out with something different to do. We didn't want to put all our people on furlough because it meant we couldn't talk to a client or candidate.
Yeah.
So what we did is we changed the model quite a lot. We started doing a lot, I'm going to say, for free for our clients and for our candidates. And it's quite interesting being here today and seeing some of your kit for the radio station.
Right.
As I started doing live broadcasts on Saturday morning, which was a, let's call it a candidate phone-in. So any candidate could send their question. We live broadcast on Facebook, and any candidate could ask their employment questions.
Right.
My employer's about to furlough me and ask me to continue doing this. Or
that's a great idea.
What a fantastic idea.
Yeah. To keep yourself current and in the spotlight.
We were making sure we were adding value to the candidates.
Yeah.
They knew we were there. They knew we were on their side, and they knew we had expertise to help them.
I like it. Yeah.
So when the market came back, we were there at kind of first choice point for them.
Hmm.
But we did something else really interesting after having got that off the ground. We set up an HR forum for clients. We still run this today. It's somewhat smaller than it was then. But every Wednesday at 2 o'clock, I chair a Zoom call. And we bring together local employers. And it's that environment where any employer can talk about any question that's affecting them and talk to other employers how they're handling it, what's going on, in a safe environment.
Great idea.
That's kind of like masterminding, where you're sharing. How have your clients reacted to that? Have they initially, were they kind of a bit wary of sharing their things with other people?
No, initially it was a huge success we had.
Right.
And I think the biggest group we've ever had is about 20.
Right.
And I have to tell you, trying to chair a Zoom meeting with 20 faces on the screen in front of you,
all with cat filters on.
Absolutely. It's quite a challenge.
Yeah.
But trying to do that, during the time of COVID, every employer was facing laws, new rules, but no one had a clue how to interpret or what it actually meant.
Yeah.
And we generally had a lawyer and accountant in the group, so we could try. And we were all making it up.
Yeah.
But with the benefit of my HR background, we had David from a legal point of view, and we could steer these people and help them. So the value our, and I'm going to say clients, but our guests got out of the session was invaluable.
Right.
So it really did work. I think the thing that's changed is as we've come out of COVID, people are not feeling under so much threat and risk right now.
Right.
And so the group has reduced a little in size.
Yeah.
But those that come still find it probably one of the most valuable meetings they attend each week.
I find that fantastic. And I love innovation. And I love it when people try to do something to get, you know, so many people sit there. We were having a conversation the other day. I can't even remember what the context was. Well, with some people, we were talking about retail businesses, and again, during lockdown, a lot of people just collapsed, and they go, you know, and but you also find, oh, I know, I won't tell you where. I was asked to go and visit somewhere with the potentiality of putting a co-working space there, and I went on a Wednesday, and I was walking around the town, and half the shops were closed. Yeah, early closing Wednesday.
Yeah.
I've just gone back to the 1950s or so. You know, have I been teleported back somewhere?
Yeah.
How on earth can you, you know, run a retail business and then shut on a Wednesday?
Try going out in where I live in Whitstable on a Monday or a Tuesday night. It's
and
really
then you
difficult.
Wonder why people are buying on the internet.
Exactly. Mm. You know, and again, you know, we had loads. I think the lockdown and the pandemic was a catalyst for a lot of things on both sides of the equation. In terms of it was a terrible time for all of us, unless you were being paid by the government to sit on your bum at home doing nothing, in which case it was great. And the thing about that, and I want to ask you about that as well, Jason, if I may, from my point of view with my main business, that was a killer because people got used to doing that, and when it finished, when furlough finished, you know, because they had a sliding scale of furlough, didn't they, for a while? And when it totally finished, people still didn't go back to work. A lot of people just sat at home. I think at one time there were like 6 million people just sat at home not doing anything.
Well, I've described this quite a lot as this is our generation's Second World War event in life, where people have reevaluated their lives. And so many people have said, I don't want to go back to how I worked before. Because, you know, whether or not they lost a relative or they saw so much risk close to them that they kind of said life's worth more than this. So they want to do the 4-day week, or they want to work from home, or they want to have a lower pressure job. And it's changed the dynamic of what people want out of employment.
My kids, my two adult kids have got big jobs in London, high-powered ones, and they often come and work from home from hours on a Friday or a Monday. And actually, they do more work because I support them. So I'll make their breakfast, clear it away. They can go straight back to their desk.
I'm glad you
make
said
their
that,
dinner.
Otherwise their employers might have been listening.
No, they love it. And they actually, I think, work really hard. And they go up and do all their Zooms and everything. But because I'm supporting them, and I was just thinking the other day, we've lost that family unit. You know, my kids are all around the world. You know, one's in Colombia and one's two in London. And if you all lived as a family, it would be much more... You'd be much more supportive, wouldn't you? So if somebody's working, the other one cooks, somebody does the washing, whatever. And we've lost that family unit now.
It's interesting, though, you say that. But from running co-working spaces, one of the things we see more than anything is home workers that actually hate working at home.
Oh, yeah, well, that brings us back to that lovely man I introduced you to. What was his name from your launch?
Len.
He hated working from home. I love working from home. I find it really easy. But Len hated it. He said he can't focus, he can't concentrate. He's desperate for the office space.
It depends on your circumstances. You know, if you live in a two-bedroom flat in the middle of town, working from home isn't that conducive when you've got a house full of kids and all the rest of it. If you live in a rural cottage and your broadband's rubbish, it's not conducive. You know, so there are lots of drawbacks to it. And the biggest drawback of the last 6 months to 9 months has been, if you work at home, it's your electricity bill.
In the winter.
It's probably a personality point here as well. And what point somebody's at in their career. So what we're seeing quite a lot now is younger people are finding it much harder to work from home.
The because they don't get the mentoring and the banter and the social... Yeah.
And no one's going to spot their talent and fast-track them.
Exactly.
Where are those career opportunities?
Funny you should say that. That's an incredibly valid point. And I've got a blog that says, is your career being damaged by remote working?
Yeah.
Because a number of people have highlighted that, is that you don't get seen.
Yeah.
You don't get help. You don't get support.
The idea of working from home and getting more time, less spent in the car commuting each day, it's great, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, with you, Les, as well, if you're trying to get into London, you're going to have find it very difficult. Or trains, strikes and things. There is a balance, isn't there, though?
But coming back to your approach to what happened, Jason, when this proverbial hit the proverbial, what I like, one of the many things I like, is that you didn't just kind of sit there and go, okay, we'll give up. You've actually tried to innovate and you've tried to do things. And that's the mark of a true entrepreneur that's going to go, okay, let's do something else. Let's diversify or let's do something different. And of course, an event like that is a great impetus for diversification and doing something for a small group of people that will do it.
You have to adapt or die, really, don't you, in some business.
And do you still do those Facebook shows?
The Facebook ones for candidates dropped off more quickly because candidates, once there wasn't a crisis, they were much less interested and the questions dried up. The client events we still run at least a couple of Wednesdays a month we run the HR forum, and every Thursday morning at 10 o'clock we still do a live feed on YouTube, HR in 10, where myself and one of our HR consultants talk about the top HR stories of the week. So
send us the links for that on our Twitter and we can put that out.
We'll promote it.
Which morning? Wednesday?
Thursday morning at 10 we're live on YouTube.
Great.
And the HR forum is 11 a.m. on a Wednesday.
Great. Cool. So we can cover that.
Thank you.
The
I'll
day before.
To you.
So where do we go from here? What's the plan from now? Presumably, I'm making an assumption that you've kind of recovered in terms of the temp market and you've now got a lot more temps out than you had during the lockdown.
Indeed. We recovered quite nicely from it. We're now at a stage, we've actually just taken on a business development executive who's now working at taking our local temps up to that next level of growth we're seeking in the Sussex Coast area.
Right.
So you may find them knocking on your door at some point in the near future about trying to promote temps.
Right.
But the other big part of what we're doing is the ASL technical brand, which is the new part, which, as I say, is the aerospace, the automotive. That, I think, is going to be really big over the next few years.
Yeah. Now, that's a different market altogether, isn't it?
Yeah.
One, it's fairly technical.
Yeah.
But two, it's also a big market. I'm trying to frame this in the right way, because there aren't thousands of aerospace companies, but there are enough spread all over the place that people that can work in it will work in different areas, geographically, I mean. Yeah. So you find, I've got a friend that's, he's actually an electrical engineer, ex-RAF, but he works almost exclusively in the automotive industry, and he works for companies like Aston Martin. Yeah. But he's a freelancer.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly the market we're working in with. Yeah. Brands exactly like that.
Yeah.
But at the other side of it, in aerospace, I mean, we've placed an ejection seat engineer, which is a fascinating job.
Not huge niche. Huge niche. Yeah. you get a lot of uplift in that job. that's kind of what I'm saying to you. It's a radical shift in what you do, from one end of the spectrum to the other, where you're going to build a pool, presumably, of highly skilled technicians that will work virtually anywhere if you pay them enough to work there, kind of thing.
I mean, it's a completely different business to ASL recruitment. It sits alongside it. It complements what we do.
Yeah.
But it's nationwide, it's high-value, skilled engineering business in military, avionics, aerospace, performance motorsport.
Yeah.
But fascinating area for growth.
Absolutely. I mean, back in my background, my background was primarily in IT, but I was so old that when I started in IT, it was kind of novel, and there weren't that many people around. And we had exactly the same thing. You know, there were a pool of, I was a freelancer for a while, there were a pool of us freelancers that you get called up by agencies to go, could you go and work there? Could you go and work in New York? Could you go and work in Hong Kong? Would you go and work in The Hague? Yeah, okay, you know, how much are you going to pay me per hour? That kind of thing. Because there was a small... I worked in banking technology as well, so it was a double niche kind of thing. But you had that very similar to what you've got, Jason, where you've got a pool of people that will work virtually anywhere, and you kind of move them around to do the projects that they do. Yeah, fascinating stuff. So when did you launch ASL Technical?
ASL Technical started on the 4th of July last year.
Right.
Which is very easy to remember because it's also my wedding
Independence
anniversary.
Independence Day.
Wedding anniversary.
What better day to get married?
Yeah.
But 4th of July last year we started. We're already expanding the team, and yeah, seeing some very rapid growth and some very niche client brands come on board working with us. So very, very exciting.
Can you name some? Or
do you know the ones I'd really like to name?
You're not allowed.
The ones that we. They prefer not to be associated.
We'll just call you KG.
And I'm going to say when somebody pays a huge amount of money to be on an advertising slogan on a performance car, they don't necessarily want somebody else to be quoting that name who's just a supplier.
Yeah, okay.
So in some cases, you know, we're working in the hypersports motor industry.
Right.
You know, ones I can mention, for example, Booker Municipal, who, if you've ever followed a road sweeper around, it's probably a Booker Municipal.
Oh, those lovely little brushes thing.
We're currently recruiting a number of trainee welders for them. So it's quite varied at one end. At the other end, we've worked with aerospace companies, I said, where we felt the most entertaining one was the ejection seat engine. not something you want somebody to get wrong.
That's a career boost.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff. All power to you, Jason, and your team there, and keep on doing what you're doing. Thank you for joining us on the Business Monk Show. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Give us a shout out for your website, if you can remember it. We know it anyway.
Fortunately, it's already been done, but it's aslrecruitment.co.uk.
Fantastic. Do check that out, people, and see what these lovely folks down on the South Coast are doing in the world of recruitment. For the moment, Jason, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me. Absolute pleasure.
Just going to say about Hastings, so I'm trying to remember, but the High Street there, you've got a few independent shops, haven't you? Still hanging on?
Yeah, mostly fish and chip shops.
Yeah.
Well, it depends. The High Street, and I say the High Street in Hastings, is the old town.
Yeah, which would be where all the character is.
Yes, absolutely delightful area. The town centre, it has suffered a bit.
Yeah.
We do have... I'm old enough to call the shopping centre new, but I think it probably went up in about 1995.
Yeah.
Seems new to me.
But have you got a few independent shops, crafty craft shops or dress shops or clothes shops or butchers or grocers?
I'm hesitating. And
dear, this is worrying.
I probably don't spend enough time there to
we'll
know.
We'll have to ask your wife.
My answer.
You won't spend any time there at all.
Oh, you don't live there?
No, I live about 15 miles away. So
do you never go to your office? Or
I do go to my office at least one day a week.
I love a high street.
But when you go to your office, you normally pop into a butcher's. No, normal people don't.
Well, actually, you know where I'm going after here?
Yeah, I know you are, but you're not normal.
I'm going to the good to buy my fish.
Yeah, because your entire life is consumed with food and drink.
Feeding my husband, he's waiting. But
and see, when you're at the Good Shed, see if they've got any Findus frozen pancakes.
They won't have. But I've got a really nice loaf of bread that I'm picking up for my new husband, which is Dockers, and it's sourdough. And I think they're in Ramsgate, I'm not quite sure. This beautiful white sliced thing, and sourdough. And he runs out. So when I get there, because Paul keeps me on so late, it's ridiculous. By the time I get there, they're closing up and they've got no bread left. So I pre-ordered it.
But he's still your new husband, and I wonder how long you have to be together.
Well, our son is 27.
But he's still your new husband.
There's a clue, yeah. So he will be getting this lovely Docker sourdough. So Shane, the fishman from the Good Shed, is getting it for me, because by the time I get there, they'll have closed up. So
Yeah, Shane the fisherman's got it. He's probably put it in with a couple of crabs and a bit of whatever he's got, skate or whatever.
So I'm not sure who's doing ASL recruitment's social media, but they're doing a fantastic job.
Superb.
Yeah, they are doing an absolutely superb job. So
I should give them a pay rise when I get back to
school. I would, yeah, because they're doing a very, very good job there. We've already had links for
your YouTube and
and your meetings, yeah.
ASL recruitment say HR in 10 on a Thursday live, and they put the YouTube link. That's super. And the HR forum, which is twice a month on a Wednesday at 11 a.m. The next one is mañana. So that's a great thing to have on hump day as well, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, very good there. HR forum, that's mañana. Mm-hmm. And there's a link for that on the Twitter.
Okay. Right, going to catch up on a few things because we've not got very long left on the show. The University of Kent, Kent Business School, have got a business clinic. It's their discovery of Kent Business School, high-calibre students and expert academics can offer your business solutions. The areas of expertise we can help with are accounting and finance, analytics, operations and systems, leadership and management, marketing, entrepreneurship and international business. If you'd like to find out any more about the consulting services that they offer at the Kent Business School, you can drop them an email at kbsbusiness@kent.ac.uk. That's kbsbusiness@kent.ac.uk.
And poor Tracy Ferguson is not feeling very well. She's got a banging headache. So she said she's going to listen to the catch-up.
Right.
And you will find Tracy she's the owner of Plucky's World. Her website is pluckysworld.com and Plucky is PLUCKYS, pluckysworld.com. And she says the time to do what you love is now. She's a personal growth trainer and mentor. So get well soon. Lots of fluids.
Cool. I've got a press release from Maidstone Borough Council, as you do. Maidstone Innovation Centre wins a building award. The Maidstone Innovation Centre building has won Best Architectural Design as part of the South East Construction Awards. The award was given to Maidstone Borough Council, Bond Bryan Architects and Ryden Construction for the work on the MIC, that's the Maidstone Innovation Centre, recognising those projects which have been designed in sympathy with their local environment, are innovative, fit for purpose and have achieved practical completion during the previous year. So congratulations to them. If anybody wants to know where the Maidstone Innovation Centre is, it's at KIMS, which is the private hospital, specialist hospital complex and science complex, just off Junction 7 of the M20.
Yeah, the NHS is sending quite a lot of patients to KIMS.
Yeah, KIMS is a private hospital, but unusually they're actually specialists. They have cancer specialisms, heart, cardio, and neurosurgery. So it's three hospitals, three different buildings, three specialist sections, but they are actually a private hospital, but they take work from all over the place.
The women in business have the big show. They're bringing together business specialists.
I get told off about that all the time.
What?
Well, I keep saying it's the big women show.
That's a good one, isn't it?
Sian doesn't like that at all. She tells me off big time.
Oh, well, maybe you need telling off sometimes.
I think you've just said it again, though.
Yeah.
Have I?
Oops. As Britney Spears once said. Women in business, big show. Bringing together business specialists, therapists, handmade retailers, alongside the professional services we all need to run our business legally, efficiently and profitably. There are lots of workshops, she says, as well, and talks to help you start and grow your business with confidence. It is, all details are on kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar, but it's on the 10th of August, 9 to 4 p.m, and it's at the Longfield Academy, Main Road, Longfield. Where's Longfield?
Near Mepham.
Near Mepham. Where's Mepham near?
Near Dartford.
Okay. Yeah. I know that bit. So kentbusinessradio.co.uk, and it's 10th of August, 9 to 4 p.m, the Big Women Show.
Ah, so you did it as well.
Freudian slip. The Women in Business Big Show.
Yeah. The Business Bunker has been at that show for the last few years, interviewing people.
Yeah.
And we will have an outside broadcast team led by Laura Lawrence that will also be doing this year's.
Laura Lawrence. I haven't heard from her for ages.
Yeah.
Give her my love. Callum Griffiths from Stone Dartford, talking of Dartford, has been named the most promising apprentice, a level 2 to 3, at the Civil Engineering Contractors Association Southern Annual Lunch and Awards event, and it's held at the brewery in London. So well done, Callum Griffiths.
Cool.
From Dartford.
Classic cars at Kenwood. Classic cars, campers, bikes, scooters, motorbikes, anything you like that's classic, sporty, or anything. The third Sunday of every month, 10 a.m. to 12 midday at Kenwood Place. It's £5 per vehicle. You can pre-book. You also get tea and coffee, and they've got bacon rolls or veggie rolls if you're that way inclined. The best way to book is to give them a call on Maidstone 01622 814 187, but you can find out all the details and get that number by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar. The last one, which was last week in fact, they had a fantastic turnout of very interesting cars and bikes and even some vintage caravans and camper vans.
Oh, they're cute. They're very happening, aren't they, now, caravans. Everybody's got into camping and stuff. I think once you get used to it, it's quite enjoyable.
Yeah. They've got a 50-year-old camper van, they inherited, and it wasn't Jules's favourite thing when they went on a tour of Scotland. She kept falling out of bed.
I've got used to it. I had to buy a new mattress, so the mattress was 20 years old as well. Yeah. But what I do is I bribe the new husband, so I do it. I do, because he grew up camping, so I do the camping. But I've got my own hand grinder in there, and my own coffee and all that. I take my Vitamix to make green smoothies, which is very noisy on a campsite. But then at the end, I say, well, can we stay at a hotel on the last night? I was factoring a little pub stay on the way home or something. I'm not really the camping type. You have to be really organised, and it's a very small space, and you go to the loo and you have to slide a door and, like, you can barely sit down. I'm not really...
Yeah. Well, you've got...
5'11".
Yeah, you got a 1950s camper.
But they're made better than the modern ones.
Yeah,
apparently.
No. But you see, young man, 10 years ago, myself and my two boys, we hired an RV and we drove the entire Pacific Coast High Road in California, 1,000 miles.
Wow.
And we surfed every single beach.
Wow.
It was the best holiday I've ever had.
So an RV is huge, though, isn't it?
And I think it's the size of a small house.
It was a 5-bedroom
RV. I would like that. That would be fine.
It was like, you had to eat a Yorkie bar while you were driving it. That was the law. It was massive, this thing.
So is that like a Winnebago type thing?
Yeah, except it was about twice the size of a Winnebago.
Really?
I used to run a motor racing team, and I had a motorhome in this country, and a lot of motor racing teams go to Norfolk, because Lake and Heath, American Air Base, there's loads of Americans there that have got Winnebagos, and when they're shipped back home, they sell them. Yeah, so there's a lot of people with Winnebagos about. But this thing that I hired was just massive. I mean, it was about 45 foot long.
What did you like to drive, though?
It was brilliant.
Really?
Yeah.
Everybody gets out your way.
Yeah, I didn't have to look. Yeah, everybody had to miss me.
The other thing is the roads over there are so big. I mean, it's easy over there, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was lost on the road. I mean, it's not the Pacific Coast High Road. Isn't even the interstate. Yeah, it's like an A road here, but it's like still 3 lanes wide. You know, it's massive. It was good fun.
I was just looking for that photo I've got of you in your racing car somewhere, because I've got it somewhere. But
yeah.
There we are. Look, I'll just tweet that out. So if you're listening,
she has a back catalogue of odd photographs of me that she tweets out all the time. It's really annoying. You've got a thing up there.
Oh. Tweet not sent. You see, it's obviously...
Yeah, good. Yeah, I've had a word with Elon. He won't publish any more of your tweets.
Twitter has gone mad because it said tweet not sent, so I tried to send it again and it said, oops, you've already said that. Really.
Right.
He's got no staff, has he?
Yeah. Right, that's it. We've reached the end of the show. I want to say a huge thank you to our two guests today, Jessica Gabb and Jason Perry. Thank you so much for being part of the show. To my stonkingly gorgeous co-host, Jules Sirkin. We'll be back with another show next Tuesday. In the interim, stay happy, successful, everyone. We'll see you all soon.
Bye-bye.